station.
The following sponsor program is paid for by Twin Fin Media.
Good morning, Delmarva. Welcome to Coastalini. I'm your host, Michael Sprouse, and we are broadcasting live from the incredible Browse About Books, located at 133 Rehoboth Avenue in the heart of downtown Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. You are in the house of Sprouse, and we're going to take a jump to the creative side of the surf. You can check out our live video stream, this entire broadcast, live on our Facebook page. It's happening this very second, facebook.com/coastalAE. All this is possible thanks to our amazing sponsors, the Residences of Lighthouse Cove, Dewey Beach, Cuvée Ray Wine Bar and Restaurant, Charles Messina Plumbing, Electric and HVAC, Sprouse Thomas and Real Estate Associates, and Peninsula Fine Art and Custom Framing in Lewis. Whew, that's a lot to say on a Saturday morning. I'm a little out of breath. I park and I walk to Browse About because I'm trying to get, it's a mile from where I park and a mile in here because you got to a point and you got to like get a little exercise going, but it's nice. It's beautiful. It's sunny out there. Everyone's out and about. There's a lot going on in Rehoboth, a lot going on in Lewis, a lot going on in Delmarva because season has kicked in. And I have two of my first guests here, two lovely, wonderful people from Lewis and Bloom. I have Marilyn Vai and Diane Stevens. They're both chairs with Lewis and Bloom. It's a phenomenal nonprofit organization that works to make Lewis more beautiful. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you guys are here. We ran into each other on the way down here.
We did.
We both have the tops down. Like, hey, how's it going? So Lewis and Bloom, you guys have a lot of attention. A lot of people, when I mention Lewis and Bloom in a conversation, people are like, oh, yes, they're the people that are always out planning around Lewis. You beautify Lewis by just one of the many things you do. Mm-hmm. But you take public spaces and you create beautiful gardens that seem to be really year-round in bloom structure and nature. But give us a little nutshell description of the group for people that may be unfamiliar with it for our listeners.
Okay, so we started
2002.
There were seven people started Lewis and Bloom. We've now grown to 260 members.
Wow.
And we are trying to do year-round plantings. In the fall, we planted 21,000 tulips. We've planted, I don't know how many thousands of annuals this year. We decorate Second Street and some other areas for the holiday season. And this year we're going to try a new decorating committee to decorate in the fall, too. So
fantastic.
We really don't have any downtime. We have a quite active membership, and we love what we do.
So now can anyone become a member of Lewis and Bloom?
Anyone can join. You can go on our website, lewisandbloom.org. There's a way to sign up online. You can attend our meetings. It's the second Tuesday of every month at 4:00 in the Lewis Library. We meet every month except August and January, and you're welcome to come to a meeting even without joining to see what we do and what we're all about.
That's phenomenal. So how many spaces around Lewis? I know it's difficult probably, but have you seen how many have Lewis and Bloom really got in there?
We actually have a number. Yeah. We have 28 parks, baskets, corners that we do, the corner in front of Dogfish Head Inn. So 28 different spaces in and around Lewis.
Wow.
That we maintain.
And that's just in Lewis.
That's in Lewis proper.
Correct. Alone. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So that's what you know, I live in downtown Lewis, and one of my favorite things to do is to every morning sort of go on a little walk. Mm-hmm. And you can't go on a walk throughout downtown Lewis without seeing these wonderful gardens and you'll see the sign usually, you know, mm-hmm. Lewis and Bloom. This is here from Lewis and Bloom. And the thing about these wonderful gardens, especially in season, they're so balanced color-wise, structure-wise, texture-wise, that everything about them, I think it's one of the essences of Lewis that makes it such a special, unique visual place, in addition to its history. And now it seems like Lewis and Bloom has become part of that history, mm-hmm. because of what they've done. And I just think that's a wonderful experience. And so your members must be thrilled to be part of this.
Our members really enjoy what they're doing. On any given day, probably, you can see members like 7:00 in the morning deadheading, maintaining these areas. And we do it because we enjoy it and we take pride in what we do.
Why is it important for any town, really, but to have a group like Lewis and Bloom, just dedicated volunteers that want to help to promote the natural sense of beauty in a town.
Well, the fact that we beautify Lewis encourages visitors to come, and I think that's important for any small town. It helps the merchants thrive. They love what we do for the downtown area. So anytime that we can do our volunteer work in the community, I think everybody benefits.
Fantastic. Now where does the it's a nonprofit organization.
Correct.
So plants are expensive, mm-hmm. you know, can be. So mm-hmm. so where, how does that happen? And where does the group get its funding and to be able to afford?
We have membership dues, of course. Very inexpensive. It's very affordable for anybody who wants to join. It's $25 per person, $40 for a family membership, and that's good for the year.
Oh, wow. That is a good price.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of donations from just people who want to encourage us to keep beautifying the town. We have sponsors that help us plant the provide the money to plant the gardens. I don't know if we can mention who they are.
Sure, why not? I say it's okay.
I'll throw a shout out to Shell Brothers.
Almost,
there you go.
Well, but it's also almost every business in Lewis mm-hmm. donates a certain time mm-hmm. of the year to support us. So we actually thank the whole community for their support.
Fantastic. Now, do you have a big annual fundraiser, or are there a variety of different?
We have several. At the Tulip Celebration, we do a tulip sale. We do a members plant sale where our members donate plants to us, and then we sell them to the membership. We do a holiday wreath sale and a Christmas market.
Nice.
So those are our big fundraisers.
Mm-hmm. And there was just some type of program, an exchange program in Italy, wasn't
Correct.
There? So tell us about that. That was very exciting. I gave a little tease on my Facebook page about it.
It was the most memorable thing I think I've ever done in my entire life. It was really quite wonderful. 14 of us from the membership flew over to Italy at our own expense. This was not supported by anybody other than our own
desire
our own
and willing to make this happen.
We stayed in Cervia, which is a beach town, not unlike Lewis. It's a small beach town on the Adriatic Sea with a canal that runs through the middle of the town, separates part of the town from the other part of the town. We were invited because we won an award from Communities in Bloom, which is an international organization. They came and judged us last year, spent 2 days in July judging our gardens, all kinds of spaces in Lewis, all the way down to how beautiful our trash enclosures are. I mean, they looked at everything.
Yeah. That's pretty thorough judging.
We were awarded, the most beautiful medium-sized town in the world.
Wow.
And because of that recognition, we were invited to plant a garden in Cervia. Cervia has 67 public gardens scattered all about the town, so it's not just in one area. Mm. You could be walking down the street, and in the middle of the median, there might be a garden that's planted by a European country. So 67 gardens that get planted every spring and get dug up every fall and replanted the following spring.
Wow.
Some of them are permanent, but most of them are not, so they're replanted every year. They're maintained by the municipality of Cervia. There's 7 or 8 students, I guess, horticulture students who are on this committee, and they're in charge of maintaining the gardens because we, of course, can't go back and forth to Italy today.
I don't understand.
I'd love to, but you know, it's not possible. So they do all the maintenance. And so we had a wonderful time.
That's great.
We spent 2 days in different types of weather. It was rainy,
rain,
it was
sun,
was muddy. It was beautiful. It was quite memorable. So we're so grateful for the opportunity.
And were you able to connect with some of the gardeners that were there and just talk about different input and ideas?
One of the other winners of the Community in Blooms Challenge last year was a town from Castle Gar, British Columbia. And they were planting a small space right across the sidewalk from where we were. We were in the public square, one of the older parts of the city. And we got to know them and develop some friendships and have become Facebook friends with some mm-hmm. of them.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
We were assigned an Italian host who is actually a Communities in Bloom judge. He did not judge our garden last year, but he is a Community in Bloom's judge.
Right.
And he and his wife live in Italy, so they were assigned to us.
Because,
of course,
nice.
None of us speak Italian. So he stayed with us the whole time. He stayed in the same hotel. We ate meals together.
Wow.
He took us on a train trip to Ravenna. which is a mosaic, I think the mosaic capital of Italy. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely stunning. And then we took a little tour of the town by foot, walked at least 10 miles.
10 miles.
Yeah. Seeing all the gardens that were scattered about the town of Cervia.
That sounds phenomenal. That must have been really just an ideal experience.
So this festival has been going on for 47 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and Cervia is known for their mm-hmm. garden festival all summer long. So it really was an honor to be invited to go there. We were the first American city to ever be invited.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's quite an honor.
It
really is. And it sounds like there was quite a regimented, you know, burning hoops you had to leap through to be able to make that happen. And you guys did it. So kudos to that. That's a lot of hard work, you know.
And we were actually invited back next year.
Fantastic. So, mm-hmm. Do you see Lewis and Blip? Now, I don't know. I think I was in a conversation with one of the other members the other day, and they'd mentioned that communities around the area are sort of trying to create their own version because Lewis and Blip has been so successful. Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening? Do you see people eventually getting together and creating sort of
Rehoboth and Blum is an example of a spinoff of Lewis and Blip.
Fantastic.
Warren Goldie and I met with Cindy Lovett last year, and she picked our brain on how to start an organization. And we just walked downtown here, and the pots are beautiful that they've done.
That's great. That's great. It becomes a sort of an infectious type of wonderful thing where people mm-hmm. are like, look what they've done in this town. Let's do the same thing here.
Exactly.
You know. So do you focus on, or as part of the organization, we'll get to the point where they say, you know, we can have peers sessions where we can give other people that are interested in this. I mean, would you proactively be interested in people from Milford, other towns reaching out and saying, how can we start something like that here?
If anybody would like to contact us, sure, they can do it through our website. I know Warren actually met with people in St. Michael's mm-hmm. about starting mm-hmm. a garden club. We had, during our tulip celebration, we had a group from Bethany come, and we gave them a tour of our gardens.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah, we're...
Now, if someone's new to the area, and of course, you know, a lot of people think of this, the Rehoboth, Lewis, Dewey, Bethany's, the 55-plus side. A lot of people end up sort of moving here from, I'm giving it up in the big city, I'm coming to the beach. It sounds like Lewis and Blum would be an organization where people could, that maybe had an interest in gardening, would want to meet other people. And like-minded, is it that type of very inclusive, welcome, join us type
definitely,
of organization?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not into gardening, we have a carpentry group. We have a communications group. So, yeah, we're looking for all types of people. You don't have to just be a master gardener. We all learn by what we do.
Most of us are not master gardeners.
No.
We're just...
Just have an interest to get together.
We love to dig in the dirt.
We even have a watering crew that gets out in the middle of the night and waters some of the pots that aren't irrigated.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yes.
I remember when a few years ago, I'd get up really early in the morning. I'm walking around down. There was always this guy from Lewis and Blum with this long sort of reaching, watering his pots.
That was Warren. He's our founder.
Oh, okay. He was very intently and focused on that because I'm not going to get all caught up in this hose here. The guy was like, I'm watering these plants. You know, it was a lot of fun.
We couldn't do anything that we do without him.
He's fantastic.
And he's still really active and has some wonderful ideas for us. So.
That's phenomenal.
We mm-hmm. thank him.
So what is the next big problem? Well, let me actually just jump into that. Are you connected to Art and Blum by any chance? Because I know that's a relatively new organization.
Art and Blum is a committee of Lewis.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And that's focusing on publicly installed artwork,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that one of the things, one of the first things, I think, was with the Silent Sentinels,
those
beautiful
wind
kinetic sculptures mm-hmm. of the library.
Right. They just had an unveiling on the Manhattan Fish Factory fishermen mm-hmm. on the Beacon Motel. We just had a mural painted from top to bottom.
Damon Plow's mural. It's phenomenal.
It is. It's beautiful.
That's one of the best murals I've seen. And I'm, you know, I hail from D.C. where there's great murals all over, mm-hmm. over the place. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you that mural is by far can hold its own. It's a gloriously beautiful mural. He did a phenomenal. I tried to get him on the radio show, but he's very shy about speaking.
Oh,
David, I'm going to make that happen.
They are selling his print in Peninsula Gallery,
which is phenomenal. Yes. Yeah, I highly suggest that everyone go down there and check out that mural. And while you're in Lewis, look around and you'll see. You have little signs that you put up with every one of your spaces,
right?
Correct?
White signs that says "This garden maintained by Lewis and Blum."
That's phenomenal because they're everywhere and they're so beautiful. What is the next? Do you have a big project that you're able to speak to without giving away too much, or is there anything?
As of right now, we're working with the city to beautify the bump outs on Second Street with planters. Self-watering planters and have flowers and, things
Fantastic.
In it. But we're still working logistics out with the city. Other than that, we really have a full plate, so we're happy to maintain what we have.
And you can have, there's no cutoff on members. You're like, the more the merrier, right?
The more the merrier.
When I joined Lewis and Blum 6 years ago, there were 42 members. Oh. And now we have 260.
Wow. What are you going to run out of room? You're going to need to.
Well, that is an issue.
That's right.
At our last meeting, we had 83 people.
Wow.
At the library.
And and they just, as you said, you don't have to live in Lewis to be a member of Lewis and Blum.
No. We have some members from Milton, and you don't have to live in Lewis proper. I'd say over half of our membership comes from outside of city limits.
I see. Have you ever thought about, because Lewis is expanding. There is, of course, Lewis proper and, downtown. Have projects have been on the horizon where they would maybe move them beyond the parameters of downtown Lewis? Or is that just a problematic thing?
Right now, I think we're concentrating
on downtown.
Well, there's a lot of public
proper
spaces.
Like I said, I think we have enough that we don't want to overextend ourselves.
One of the things that I'm not sure a lot of people know about is our children's learning garden.
No, I'm not familiar with that. Tell us about
that. In Stango Park, we have a little plot. It's full of tomatoes, lettuce, herbs, flowers, peppers. We have activities on Mondays and Fridays in the summer while school is out. On Mondays, we do story hour where the children's librarian, Jen Noonan, comes out and reads stories to the kids on the lawn. And then we let the kids go into the garden and pick vegetables if there's things that are ready. If not, we let them water, do a little bit of weeding. On Fridays, we have an activity. Usually it's a food activity or a music activity. We've got the butterfly people coming in. We've got the bee people coming in. The Lewis Beekeeping Club is going to be there in a few weeks to talk about the importance of bees as pollinators. So that goes on all summer long, too, Mondays and Fridays. So anybody who's interested in that, it starts at 10:30 on Mondays for story hour and 10:30 on Fridays for activities.
That's phenomenal. And anyone can come to that with their
anybody
kids?
Anybody can come to that. We get
a lot of
visitors in the summertime because we advertise in the bags that go to the rentals companies.
Oh, sure.
So families, when they come to the area, can look in their bags and see
what's
going on.
I love
kids.
The fact that you're getting children involved in this because, they're the ones that are going to become the tomorrow's adults and are going to be dealing with a lot of these important
issues. We're starting early.
As Lewis in general, the Lewis and Blum has brought so much wonderful flower and fauna into the area. How is it doing bee butterfly population wise comparatively, if you know? I mean, if not, it's fine. But now I'm curious because those are important issues to be concerned about.
Our beekeeping club is really working to promote the importance of bees as pollinators. And I think the more they get out there and advertise that fact, the more people are going to be in tune. We actually have one of our gardens is a pollinator garden.
Oh, really?
Specifically, we have two.
Two, one at Canal Front Park and one in George H.P. Smith Park.
So there's two pollinator gardens. And, of course, we try to plant plants that are going to encourage butterflies and bees. So. It's,
so you think we're doing pretty good down there?
I think we're doing a pretty good job.
I'm seeing a lot of dragonflies, which I like.
Yes.
Because they eat mosquitoes, and I like the fact that they do that. So I guess that's a good thing,
right? And the ladybugs, we do a ladybug release program in the Children's Learning Garden in a few weeks.
That's phenomenal.
They also will attack the aphids and things like that.
Yeah, they're good for gardens.
That's good. Well, it's good to know. I didn't know that you had these other extra programs for kids. I love that. I think that's so commendable. And I'm sure, hopefully, there's a lot of parents right now. I'm like, I know what we're doing Monday at 10:30.
We're going to
take your kids to the garden and learn something.
And it does start this Monday.
It does. It's this coming Monday. Monday. It's the first time for the summer.
That's so phenomenal. 10:30 on Monday. Is it every Monday?
Every Monday until the end of August.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So anyway, the best way to get more information on Lewis and Bloom would be to do what?
Go to our website.
Lewisandbloom.org.
It's everything is listed by, like Children's Learning Garden has their own page. Art and Bloom has their own page. On the front page, it has a calendar of events for each month. And Beauty Spot Award is
Forgot. How could I forget about the Beauty Spot Award?
As a matter of fact,
that sign's right in front of my house.
Yes. Michael Sprouse's and his friend George.
Yeah, we won the Beauty Spot Award.
Beauty Spot Award winners
for this year. I can't tell you what a surprise. Yeah. I was very honored about that. I'm not kidding. It was like, wow. People are like, ooh, you've got the Beauty Spot Award. Like, yes, we do. There it is.
We have a beautiful yard.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And people can do every month.
Yes, through the summertime. This is something we started, I want to say 3 years ago, honoring a garden or a spot in Lewis. Anybody can nominate somebody. Mm-hmm. That's also on our website.
Good.
So
I'll
you don't
be
have to
nominating
be,
some people.
You don't have to be a Lewis and Bloom member to nominate somebody.
Okay. I think that's a great idea. I love that. So included. Yeah. So great. It's just sharing the wealth, you know, like
and
making
you,
people.
And you get to have a Lewis and Bloom Beauty Spot Award sign on your front
and
yard.
And you get a little gift certificate.
That's
yes,
right.
You do.
So one of my favorite little wardens. I'm giving them a shout out too. See, we're shouting everybody out
that's
here
right.
on
that's
the radio.
Right.
I want to thank you so much. I know we only have a couple of minutes left before we're going to go to our first break. Thank you, ladies, so much. I think what you do is so admirable. I think it's such a great group, and I'm so happy to be able to give it a shout on the radio. I'll be doing it again soon. I want to remind people that it's lewisandbloom.org, and you also have a very good Facebook page.
We do. Mm-hmm.
So people that just
active.
Love that social media, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to get. In fact, when I was there setting up, Was it you? I don't know who's on the other side. Is it you? Great. You're right there, Diane. It's like responding immediately. I really appreciate that. So again, I want to thank my guests today. You're both chair members of the
We're
organization.
One of the three of us.
Okay, fantastic. And the other one is
Sue,
yeah, so I spoke to on the phone
yes.
the other day. Mm-hmm. And it's Marilyn Vi. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You are, perfect.
I like the Vi. It's a cool name. Is that Italian?
It
Vi.
Is.
I like that. And Diane Stevens.
Correct.
Did you have something to do with the trip to Italy? Is that why?
I did not.
You don't speak Italian, but I have an Italian last name. I love Italy.
It was amazing. Maybe if you join Lewis and Bloom, you can come with us next year.
I can go check that out. I would love that. We got about 60 seconds left. Ladies, thank you so much. Keep up the good work. I'm going to try to go by there Monday. I think that would be a great little story and maybe take some photos or something for Facebook.
Sure, great.
I highly recommend that if parents are looking for something for their kids to do.
Absolutely.
I think school is out now, right?
It is school
in most places. My grandson doesn't get out till next Wednesday.
Oh, right? Well, we'll have to wait a little bit, but I think everyone's going to have a great time there, without a doubt. We just got a couple of seconds left is what I keep getting from Billy. Every time I say we're out of time, it seems like I'm still talking because I haven't heard my cue music come in. Lewisandbloom.org. Very quickly, who makes the decisions about the plants that get picked for that?
We have an annual committee. Warren Goldie chairs it, and then there's probably 10, 12 of us that put input in as to color schemes, type of plants, and the same with the tulips.
Oh, nice. Because you guys are doing a great job with that.
They've already started planting the tulips that they'll be digging into the ground in October and November.
That's phenomenal. It's exciting. It's all exciting stuff. Of course, we love the tulips there that you have. And you're also, are you part of the big tulip festival that we do every year?
Well, the chamber hosts that. But yes, it wouldn't be without all the tulips that we plant.
Wow. And how many tulips did you say you planted?
21,000.
21,000 tulips. How long did that take?
That was over a week or two.
Wow.
But we also do a tulip dig when the tulips are done. And they're gone in less
than an
hour.
Here's my outro music. Well, speaking of less than an hour, thank you, ladies, for coming here. We're going to be back, and then we'll talk more about that the next time I have you on the air. Don't go anywhere. We're on Coastal A&E. I'm your host, Michael Sprouse. We'll be back with Brian Clark.
The following program is a paid commercial presentation.
A day of wine and roses, laugh and run away like a child at play.
That's a nice song. We're live now. Hey, Brian. We're listening to you. We're listening. You can't hear it, but that's the Days of Wine and Roses. Yeah, that's a great recording.
I really had fun with that. That was a good.
That's a great one. I got that on the air.
2006.
That's from a release called Multicolored Blue.
Yes.
Right on.
Long time ago.
Yeah. So listen, everybody. This is my friend Brian Clark is here with me live on Coastal A&E. Broadcasting live from Browse About Books. He's a very good friend, an amazing, talented entertainer, vocalist. I'm glad to have you here.
Good to be here.
Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry I missed your show last night.
Not a problem. Irish eyes, that's not
that's
a problem.
That's right. Yeah. We were trying to work it out to get down there, and I just realized that it was going to work out for me. But I had friends in the audience that were like, oh, you got to come get in there and check it out. I'm like, it's going to be the radio show tomorrow. You know,
it's good. I'm going to be in Rehoboth next Thursday. Cuvée Ray.
That's right.
Other places, but that one in particular is going to be first time. First time at Cuvée Ray.
Is it your first time there? That's really good to know. So that is a special event there, Brian. That's a dinner and a show event.
That's correct. All the information's on my website and theirs. I think it's $39 a ticket.
I think that's right.
Wife
I think that's sitting in here. Yes, your lovely wife is here.
I looked at her. She knows details better than I do. Dina.
Studio audience here. Hello, Dina. How are you? We've met before, actually.
Now, who are those folks over there?
That's George Thomason, and that's my birthday friend, Holly Moskarin, who's visiting from D.C. Yes, it's our birthday today.
Who's that young man over there?
That's our board op, Sean.
Man, he looks important.
Yeah. Well, he just sits there quietly and makes sure everything works properly.
All that equipment he has. Okay.
All that equipment. Well, you know what it's like having equipment around you. I've been watching you perform for years. We first met, I want to say it's like 15 years ago.
It's a long time ago,
yeah. And Rehoboth Beach Theater of the Arts, way back when. And we were getting shows together there, and I was sort of stage managing. I was assistant manager of the theater. I did a lot of the PR for that time. This is before it became Clear Space, after it became the church, somewhere in between around that time period. And then, of course, you would start, and you had been. You perform in different venues around town. But you have such a huge audience of devotees. The last time I was at one of your shows, which I believe was this great Day After Valentine's Day show at 1776.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. It was very romantic. There was literally a group of women that drove down from New York specifically to see that show and to see you. And while we were there, a guy proposed to his fiance on stage.
That's
it was
right.
like
That's
this
right.
wild romantic thing, and everybody loved it. You brought down the house.
Well... You're nice. You're kind. It was fun. This area has been good. It's been good with the following, and what I like is that they respond to the American Songbook.
That is your forte.
Yes.
So for people that might be confused by that term, though I've had you on the show several times. We've talked about it. What is the Great American Songbook in a nutshell, and why is this something that you, as an artist, a vocal artist, focus on pretty much exclusively?
You know, I wish I could be better explaining what is the American Songbook. Someone more well-spoken and probably that has done more of their homework. But I would say to people, think of Tony Bennett, think of Nat King Cole, think of Frank Sinatra, who's my favorite. Think of those types of singers.
And the songs that they, you know, their body of work.
That they're known for, and you've got the American Songbook. I mean, they're the jazz standards. They're the standards. They never die. They never grow old. They're timeless. They're classy. You want to know what the lyrics are saying because they're well said, and the melodies were created by musicians who really... produced melodies and not just a few notes that are just going over and over and over.
Sort of repetitive thing that are just sort of like, you know, auto-syncing to some crazy backtracked beat. That's
exactly.
A different, very different thing. Because when you, I think out of many, and I've met a lot of entertainers over the years, and one of the things that the ones that rise to the top that end up doing really well, understand the lyricism in a song, understand delivery, understand that a lot of these songs are really telling little stories. It's a form of acting, and you have mastered that ability to take these songs and really make them your own, even though a lot of the time you're doing it in the style of some of these people that you yourself vitalized and grown up and even have known occasionally over the years, correct?
Yes, that's true. And that's, you and I have talked about that because, you know, I have, you know, entered into that world of tribute artists impersonating. But, you know, even impersonators that are strictly impersonators, most of them will admit they want to find their own voice. And sometimes they get boxed into that, and I have fought against that. I like tipping my hat to like Sammy Davis. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun. I, you know, do it here and there, but I love to find out who I am within those great tunes. What does my voice sound like? What do I have to say with that song? And that's just a constant work in progress, especially when you've spent so much time listening to those great people. You can't help but be influenced by how they, you know, interpreted the lyric, how they put it forth. So it gets in your head. I mean, Sinatra is one of the most incredible song stylists, so that when you hear him, you know that's Frank. So if you listen to Frank a lot as a singer, as a vocalist, it's only natural you're going to probably almost subconsciously sound or try to sound like him. But Tony Bennett said it best. He said, in reference to singers trying to sound like Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. they do themselves an injustice. Rather than trying to sound like him, they should find their own voice within those great songs. So,
interesting. So at what point does, when you're listening and over your many years of studying these masters, I guess for lack of a better term, when do you remember when you had the experience that you broke away from just hearing it and then sort of hearing it and processing it and realizing, oh, this is, you know, his treatment of this song has risen above just the quality of his voice. Now we're getting into some type of emotive backstory that he's putting into the song. I mean, does that happen? Is that what you're talking about?
That's a good way to put it. I heard him in a program say once that whenever he would look at a song and look at the lyrics of, you know, that particular song, he wanted to try to, and this was really important, he wanted to try to examine, and I'm paraphrasing, and analyze what he thought that lyricist, the writer of the song, was trying to say, and try to be true to that. And if you know, if you've listened to Sinatra, he, more than any artist that I know of, always acknowledged the writer and the arrangers during his live mm-hmm, performances. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, this song is written by Jimmy Van Heusen and arranged by Don Gosselin,
just using or whoever he had to put up.
And he did it so eloquently and sincerely, and I'm sure the writers appreciated him. But he wanted to know, he took the time with that song and tried to really be true to the integrity of what that writer was trying to say, and then he tried to produce that. And I wish, I would love to say that I do that.
Oh, I think I think you do. I've heard you perform so many times, and I think one of the
if I do, it's by accident. Do you really think so? I really do. I don't
just a
study
fluke that these people are like standing up and applauding, like more and more. I mean, you're just so talented.
But, thank you, Michael.
But you think it's just, I mean, you're listening to these songs, you perform them so many times, so what's going through your head?
Well, let me put it this way. Here's another way to approach it. Think about this. Frank Sinatra would get, let's say, a song presented to him. Mm-hmm. He's not, and an arrangement. Now, maybe he heard another artist produce their particular version of that song in some cases, but if I'm not mistaken, when he was really on top, he started out early in his career. Then, for one reason or another, things kind of went away for him. You know, he really went down. Then, when he came back bigger than ever, he was all the new songs that were being written. If I'm not mistaken about this, I don't think I am. But so when they were going to present a song to any particular artist, they would pick Sinatra because he was at the top of the game. He had no reference point on hearing that song. So he had total creativity and the arrangers that he was presented with to produce that song. He had no reference point for that song.
Hmm.
So he had to create it. Well, I'm listening to his creation. Now I'm going to do the song. And it's hard to get away from what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I'd want to, because how can you improve on it? I've heard some artists take, say, like, for example, I've Got You Under My Skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Nelson Riddle arrangement. And I've heard some today, top artists that sing that genre, that style of music, and they sound great. But I'm like, but and I can tell they're trying to do something unique with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good. It's cool. But I'm like, I almost want to say, don't do that. Stay true. Just find, use your voice and stay true to that original form that he did. Because how do you improve on that? I just don't think you can.
Well, it's funny. I should say that, because there are sometimes recordings released by, it seems also that often you'll find vocalists that as they get at a certain point in their life and their career, they suddenly put out an album of old standards.
Mm-hmm.
Great American Songbook covers. Rod Stewart has done it. Annie Lennox just did it recently. Natalie Cole was one of the first, you know, God rest her soul. She was great. She did an homage to her father. Linda Ronstadt, on and on and on.
Yes.
And they seem to get a certain point and they're like, now I'm going to put out these wonderful standards, and they give their own treatment to them.
Yes.
Sometimes they don't necessarily work so well, though, because they're trying to make them so unique that I sometimes like, why even bother to because it doesn't hit the mark. That's just my opinion. But
well,
if you have that experience,
saying what I just said.
Yeah,
I think,
exactly.
You know,
is that what you're talking about?
But someone else might sit down in here among both of us, and maybe these folks here might feel, well, no, I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those particular artists that took those songs and put their own twist on it, I thought it was great. And that's fine, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, too. I just happen to love the original artists that made those songs most popular. Natalie Cole, you brought her up. From what I understand, in her career, no album, not one album that she produced, did as well as the album that she paid honor to her father, Unforgettable.
I
don't know if that was the name of the whole album, but that album sold more for her than anything she did previously.
Mm-hmm.
And her approach to his songs, I thought, was done well, because she performed them as herself, but she stayed true, I thought, to the form of the song.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. That was a great album. I think that, I can't believe it was over 25 years ago, I believe, when that first came out.
Yes.
I want to say it was out in 1990-91. Of course, since she had, which later became semi-controversial, the duet she did with her father, because I think her own mother sued her over that.
Oh,
but I
want to
get into
that. There's
a lot
of,
mess. I got a little crazy over there. But that just sort of underscores the power of that genre of music.
Oh,
that still to this day that artist will turn back to it and do well. Rod Stewart did very well.
Yes, he did.
I think he has two out now like that. Bob Dylan has done a release of standards.
Wow.
You know,
which is I think a great thing, to keep those songs alive. Not that they will die. They will not die, but it seems like the music industry, they produce, and then all of a sudden it's like everyone gets bored, because I'm going to get in trouble. There's no substance.
Uh-huh.
And then they have to go back and find the substance again. And then there's a few artists, young, I mean, just give it, Bruno Mars,
mm-hmm.
John Legend.
Mm-hmm.
They're
very strong vocal. They're very strong. They're running for their vocal.
And there's more. And it's not what Lady Gaga. I mean, amazing vocalist, but her greatest work to me was when I heard her really sing with Tony Bennett. The motion picture she just did, Star is Born.
Yep.
Excellent music.
Yeah.
So there are unique moments with today's artists that sing a song with great lyrics and great melodies. It's not just that the American Songbook had the only great songs. I don't believe that, but they set the standard.
Mm-hmm.
So just stay true to that, which is write a great lyric, meaningful, and really put some substance into the melody, and you got a great standard.
We're going to talk more about that in a second, because I think it's a very interesting aspect of this conversation. But first, I need to give a call out to one of our sponsors. This one is very important. The Residences of Lighthouse Cove Dewey Beach. Do you like the idea of luxury living? Well, that's exactly what you'll find. The Residences of Lighthouse Cove Dewey Beach. They feature brand new, beautiful 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedroom luxury condominiums nestled directly next to the bay at 1301 Coastal Highway in Dewey Beach, Delaware. And today, you can check out the stunning condos and the amazing views they offer for yourself. Saturday, June 15th, between 1 and 4 p.m. during the Residences of Lighthouse Cove Dewey Beach Public Open House. Enter for your chance to win their land and sea giveaway, a golf foursome at Baywoods, or a half-hour fishing trip of $500 value. No purchase necessary. That is today. The Residences of Lighthouse Cove, Dewey Beach, folks, located at 1301 Coastal Highway in Dewey Beach. So welcome to luxury living in Dewey Beach. For more information about the Residences of Lighthouse Cove, visit them online at www.theresidencesde.com. They do have amazing views, by the way. And you can go down and check them out between 1 and 4 o'clock. Open house. Brian, what we were just talking about, you said one of the things, you know, I have another radio station, another radio show on a different station that I do every Monday night on 99.1 FM Radio Rehoboth. Shout out, by the way, to my friends Eddie Sherman and Peggy Rail. We have a jazz show that's going to start there Sunday night. I want people to check that out. But I listen to a lot of new music because I like to populate. I do an hour's worth of song. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, man, when I'm going through new releases and new release radar, some of these tunes, they sound so repetitive, so redundant, and it's the vocals are the same.
I can't do it.
It's the same treatment. It doesn't male, female. It's the exact. They sound like they've been run through the same auto-tune programming. The lyrics are vapid, and I'm like, wow, this is what's being released is new music. I can't get my head around it. I'm like, I'm not going to play this. Now you will find people that rise, you know, cream rises to the top. Mm-hmm. You will find something unique, and that's what makes my playlist.
Yes.
But I think that sounds like that's what you're talking about. So, but is this one of the reasons that you hold true to this genre that you do such justice to when you're performing?
Well, yeah, I just hold true to what I love to sing, you know, and now what happens, because when I do my performances around town and around the shore, I call the show Sinatra to Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just came up with that as a way to kind of capitalize, you know, what's going to happen or what people could hopefully try to, and you know, think about what they could expect. So Sinatra, I mean, there's no explanation. Most people recognize, they get a sense of what that means. Soul could be kind of, well, what does he mean by that? And I like that they're like, what does he mean by that? But so what I do under that umbrella of the show title is that gives me the freedom to tip my hat to Motown, which could be called soul.
Sure.
Barry White.
That's definitely soul.
Lou Rawls, Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
Even Tom Jones, even, you know, wherever else I go, but I always come back to Sinatra.
And how, tell me that full circle journey. Why is it that it brings you back to Sinatra?
Well, he's my favorite.
Uh-huh.
If, and I always say this to people, if you want to figure out what your real core love of music is, ask yourself this question, because you'll hear people say, I love all kinds of music, and
true,
that's cool, and I believe that they believe that. And maybe they couldn't answer this question, which is, if you could only have one artist to listen to, you weren't allowed to listen to anyone else, who would it be?
Mm-hmm.
And what would your record collection look like? You couldn't listen to anything else. That artist would be the only one you listen to day in, day out, or whenever you decided to listen to music. Who would it be? Who would it be for you?
I don't know if I can answer that question.
And that would be the case for people.
Yeah.
For me, Sinatra. Because actually, when I'm at home, smoking a cigar out on the deck with a nice
that wistful
cocktail,
looking, yeah.
As much as I love Motown,
uh-huh.
as much as I like to hear Tom Jones, great singer, Engelbert Humperdinck, and I will visit those various artists. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, ask my wife, who am I probably listening to? Sinatra.
Yeah.
But that's what I love, you know. I love Tony Bennett.
He was at the top of the pyramid there for you.
Yeah, and I can even say why. Out of all the vocalists, to me, and from my interpretation and my ear and what I hear, he's the least contrived when he sings a lyric.
Interesting. That's very interesting to hear. Least contrived. I've not heard it put quite that way before. Very interesting. So
it's
how
pure?
Yeah.
It's,
no,
it's believable.
Sure.
It's no example. Loved his voice. Great. Incredible. One of the greatest. Nat King Cole.
Mm-hmm.
But Nat King Cole, if he sang Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, that's a little contrived, but a beautiful contrivance, you know.
Yeah.
Now, if Sinatra sang that, Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men. Now, I'm not trying to sing like Sinatra.
But it sounds more pure,
just
more
straightforward.
Fluid.
Just,
yeah.
You know. Just tell the story, bruh.
Interesting. I wish I could remember. I've been looking for, and we only got like 5 minutes left, but you're going to stick around for a little bit longer for our Facebook live stream, because I want to finish this conversation. Years ago, I saw it was on some special about Frank Sinatra. Maybe I saw it on YouTube. I can't remember, but it was from a show that Frank Sinatra was in the 60s. It was some variety show, and there's this incredible set. It's in Manhattan, and he's singing this heartbreaking song.
Yeah.
Can't remember the song. What I can remember is the way he sang it. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, is this him as a singer? Is this him as the actor? Because he was an incredible actor.
Yes.
When he was given good roles. And it was such a perfect blending.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I was just sort of haunted by it. And I keep looking, but now I can't remember the name of the song. But it was a beautiful song about...
so many.
It was incredible. So I think, because people will say to me, well, I'm a big Dean Martin fan. People are like, oh, well, I think Dean Martin was a better vocalist than Frank Sinatra. And people to this day will still get in these debates, but
sure, they
you know,
do.
You're like you're going with Frank.
But that's the beauty of music. I mean, everyone, and there's no right or wrong. You know, it's just it's people's preference and taste. So like Tony Bennett, I hear that too, as you're pointing out his vocal ability versus Sinatra's. A lot of people say, oh, Tony Bennett was he was much better. At, I don't think it's about who's better. I really don't.
Well, he's still alive, which is good.
He's awesome.
He's still performing.
I mean,
he's
I love
all
Tony
of them.
Bennett.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a different paint stroke. It's a different artist putting forth. So I want to backtrack on what I said about Nat King Cole, because unless someone's out there, I can't believe that he said that about Nat King Cole.
This Nat
Let
King
me
Cole.
Make it clear. I think Nat King Cole was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beyond. I just, from a choice, from an artist's choice, prefer to hear a vocalist. And yet I love to hear Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
But my favorite is when I hear a vocalist just sing the song. A female vocalist example. Probably this one I'm about to mention most people have never heard of.
Hold on 1 second. That's about all we have time left for. You're going to stick around. We're going to stay on our Facebook live stream on Coastal, Facebook.com, Coastal AE. We go like 60 seconds left. I want to thank everyone for listening today. Brian, your show, your next show is at Cuvée Ray. It's your first time there. Cuvée Ray is at 236 Rehoboth Avenue, right here in Rehoboth Beach. And that is from 8 to 10 o'clock. It's an event. It's a dinner and a show, which I've seen you do. Phenomenal experience. I highly suggest.